Welcome to the Black Woman in Bloom podcast, a semi-monthly podcast designed to uplift, encourage, and empower Black women by exploring wellness topics that promote self-care and mindfulness. I'm your host, Tarion Yael, a certified health educator and medical lab scientist. For more information, please visit blackwomaninbloom.com. While I hope you enjoy listening to and learning from the podcast, please remember that it is not a substitute for a relationship with a licensed healthcare provider. Hello, and welcome to episode 31. As promised, I'm back with a brand new episode after taking a short break from the podcast to rest and recharge. For this episode, I had the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Candace Nicole Hargons. Dr. Candace Nicole Hargons is an award-winning associate professor of counseling psychology at the University of Kentucky, where she studies sexual wellness and liberation. She hosts Fuck the System, a sexual liberation podcast, and How to Love a Human, a liberation podcast that asks people with multiple marginalized identities what the world would be like if it loved them. She's published over 50 research articles and has been featured in the Huffington Post, the APA Monitor, Good Housekeeping, Women's Health, Blavity, Cosmopolitan, and the New York Times. It's been a while since I've interviewed anyone, so it was refreshing and fun to have Dr. Hargons on the podcast. She truly is a wealth of knowledge, and the work she does around sexual liberation for marginalized folks is necessary and so important. During our conversation, we discuss some topics like transactional modesty, body liberation, and more. I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did. Let's get into my discussion with Dr. Candace Nicole Hargons. Dr. Candace, I'm wondering if you could just kind of introduce us to the topic of transactional modesty and just kind of what that is and kind of just get us going this morning.
Yes. Okay, so I came up with the term when Sierra wore that beautiful and sheer dress, and so many people had stuff to say about it, negative stuff to say about it, specifically because she was a married woman, she was a Christian woman, she was a mother. And I was like, what is this? Like, I've been sitting with why we call some Black girls fast and like those, you know, like these, the way we label and police Black girls and women's sexualities. And I was like, what do we think she did to transgress these ideas of motherhood and wifehood and Christianity in wearing this dress? And so the concept of transactional modesty really speaks to this idea that if you portray a certain standard of womanhood, a really small, narrow window of acceptability, respectability, then you do that because it brokers you access to the husband and to kids and to a secure life and all of these things. And that women who transgress that standard don't deserve it. They aren't worthy of it. And so the women who have upheld the standard and feel like I've gotten the things that I deserve based on this feel especially affronted when they see a woman who's not upholding that same standard have access to the same things. I think it pisses people off. And I was like, because why are people so mad right now? Like, what about this angers some people and not others? And so that's where the term came from. And so I put it out there on Instagram and I was just kind of playing around with it. People were like, yes, yes. And then they talk, you know, some folks talked about how they used to buy into that and kind of let it go. And some folks are like, no, this is real. It's real in my community.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's really interesting that like you came up with this and you were playing with this idea, you know, of like, well, what is this thing, right? And especially the part about, you know, this idea of, oh, it's somebody's wife. Mm-hmm. It's somebody's mother, you know?
It's like, if you were just unattached, then maybe. But now you got to represent your family. And to do that, you have to have your nipples and like what covered in a certain way. Like,
yeah. And I don't know if this could just be my perception, but it seems when it's Black women that seem to really get those criticisms of that, a lot of times we hear it towards Black girls, Black women, but especially within our own community.
Yeah. There's definitely a racialized, racist component to it. I don't think it's exclusive to our communities. I think most communities police women's sexualities and expression of their sexuality. So there's a Madonna whore complex version in every culture, every racial culture. But I think because I'm in the Black community, I'm attuned to how we talk to each other, how we regard each other. And so I can name what those labels are and with a little bit more precision. And I care more about how we treat each other than how other communities treat each other at this stage in my life. So that's where that centering Black women's experiences comes from for me.
Okay. I appreciate you saying that and clarifying that for me.
Yeah, because I don't think we're unique in that way. I think that there is a racist component to it in that other cultures think they get to police Black women's sexualities and expression, whereas it doesn't go the other way. Wow. Because of that, the way we organize our humanity.
Okay, so this definitely brings to mind right now Janelle Monáe's new album, The Age of Pleasure, and leading up to promoting the album, and we've really just been seeing her evolution as an artist and as a woman, she uses
a gender expansive person.
Yeah, she's using more gender expansive, and she's identifying as non-binary right now, and it's just to me been very beautiful to watch. And just seeing her be so liberated in that. Mm-hmm. And definitely, I've been hearing a lot of conversation about, and she's even spoken about this on interviews that she's done, how when she used to wear a suit, people would try to use her as this example of, this is how a woman should dress. She's covered. And she did not like that. She said, no, you know, this is my way of honoring my parents, the uniform, and this, I feel sexy. I feel fly in this. And now that she said, you know, she tweeted titties out for the next 15 years, you know, and she's like, all of those versions of that, this is us, all of these versions, whether we're in a suit, whether we have our titties out, she said, this is us. And this is the age of pleasure.
I'm living for it. I am living for Black women assuming dynamism, like that we get to be multifaceted in many different things in our lifetimes. And sometimes that does look like, you know, suits. And sometimes that looks like a beautiful pair of breasts that you want on display. and when they're no longer what society deems beautiful. Like, I love the imagery she had of her and her aunt or an elder Black woman, whose breasts sagged and they were chilling and vibing. And it's like, both of those breasts should be on display. It wasn't just like they have to be perfectly perky breasts, you know? So I love that nuance. Like, if it's going to be for the next 15 years, 15 year later, breasts going to look different, you know?
Oh, that's true, isn't it? just embracing all of that. Yeah. And in an interview that they did recently, they also said, they worded it so beautifully. It was something along the lines of, I'm no longer dimming my light or dimming myself to make others comfortable. Mm-hmm. And just the, and you could just see the liberation, just the freedom. So I was just wondering if you could just kind of speak on just that, the liberation for mm-hmm. Black folk, you know, Black women,
yeah.
Black femme, Black non-binary folk.
Mm-hmm. I think that we are so worthy of the liberation we desire, but some of us have had our radical imaginations compromised. And so we can't even imagine liberation until someone shows us what it could potentially look like. From their estimation, their liberation was in both the suit and in, you know, in a more like physically exposed, like both could be liberated. And I see it the same way. And so it's for me about self-definition, as opposed to assuming that stereotypes society imposes on Black people have to define you or you have to react to them all the time. It's about autonomy and agency, being able to say, this is what feels right for me right now, being able to entrust your body and your intuition and your wisdom, being able to challenge norms that maybe have been familiar but no longer serve you. So those components are liberating for me. That's what I, when I think about sexual liberation, but when I think about collective and global liberation, they're tied together in that way. And so for Black people, women, femmes, gender expansive folk, non-binary folk, men, like I really think that we all should take a moment. Sometimes you just need to take a pause and determine who you want to be. And it, sometimes it does align with what your community or your friends or your family see in you or want you to be. But sometimes it doesn't. And are we, you willing to take the risk, you know, to lose a little bit of that social capital or clout for a little while to find yourself and to be yourself?
Yeah, that's really beautiful. I love that you, you know, gave some terms to think about and gave some language yeah. for just expanding and being able to explore that. I've been thinking a lot about self-expression. When you mentioned that sometimes the way we like to present does align with our society or culture, mm-hmm. and sometimes that's comfortable for us, or that's our truth.
Yeah,
I love the movie The Woman King, and I think about mm-hmm. this scene. It's pretty much in the middle of the movie where Malik, he comes to the king's palace and he sees Nawi, and they're talking through the palm line, and he asks, may I come in? And she says, no, you know, no men are allowed past the palm line. And she asks, are foreign men allowed to look upon the king's women? And Malik says, well, in Brazil, because he's from Brazil, he says, well, in Brazil, women cover their bodies with long sleeves and long skirts. And Nawi says, well, how do they run? You know, it's not the best example, but to me, it kind of speaks to, you know, for Nawi and the Agoji women, they dress in this way, you know.
It's functional.
It's functional, right? Because where they live, the climate, it's hot. And then they're warriors. They fight. They need to be able to run and jump and do all these things. And then, whereas for Malik in Brazil, maybe the women are not running. you know.
But it's also still hot. And them Victorian dresses were not hitting. Like.
That's where I start thinking, okay, so I wonder, was it a component of, you know, Catholicism, religion?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I think of that scene and she says, well, how do they run? You know?
And it was so curious. It wasn't even judgmental. It was like, huh, well, how are y'all supposed to figure out that part? But I think if we approach ourselves and our customs, our traditions, our norms with that type of curiosity, we give ourselves permission to rethink it. Like for me, some days I show up as a professor and I'm in sweats. My intellectual capacity remains the same if I'm in a suit or if I'm in sweats. And so, you know, that's just how I want to be represented today, how I want to represent today. And a lot of my colleagues do that. And so when I think about like these standards of professionalism or these standards of beauty, these standards of modesty, people saying, well, you shouldn't wear bonnets to your doctor's appointments and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, everybody gets to have preferences, but are you willing to examine them? Even if you keep the same preference after that, could you potentially examine where it may come from, how you got that idea, what it means to you and why it means that to you?
I like that you said to, you know, be willing to examine, because in preparation for our interview, I started thinking like, well, for myself, like, how do I like to, you know, I kind of do this anyway. I kind of overthink things. It's the scientist in me. I start thinking like, well, why do I like to wear this and not that? Because Dr. Candace, so in one instance, if I'm home, I might like to wear just, you know, a little wrinkly t-shirt and some booty shorts, you know, and be like Issa dancing in my booty shorts, mm-hmm. you know, and just dance around, or just because I'm comfortable, I'm at home. Yes. And then as soon as I say, oh, I need to go to the store, I'm going to change mm-hmm. for me personally.
Yeah.
But I know there are plenty of women who will grab their keys, their purse, and put on their Gucci slides mm-hmm. and go to the store in their t-shirt and their booty shorts and not give it a second thought.
Yep.
And so I thought about, well, oh my, you know, this, where does it come from? Was it what I saw where I was raised? I started just examining that and just thinking about that. And then also thinking about how I relate to others.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm out and about and I do see another person, another Black woman or man, and they're in their, you know, their booty shorts and their Gucci slides and their bonnet, what are my thoughts? Mm-hmm. What do I say in my mind yeah. about that person or myself?
What story do you tell?
Yeah. And I started thinking, okay, well, oh my goodness, like, where does that come from? You know?
mm-hmm. And the thing is, so for you and telling the story, I really appreciate the vulnerability in that, because I think a lot of us have moments where we're like, I'm judging. Where is the judgment coming from?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like, but then I thought past that, it's like, okay, well, I'm judging, but here's the thing is like, first of all, they're human just like me. And especially if I see another Black woman, another woman of color, another person of color, and we're in these Black bodies. So whether I'm in t-shirt and jeans or they're in a t-shirt and booty shorts, there could be instances where we may encounter folks who, regardless of how we're dressed,
that's right,
regardless of how we're behaving, whether I'm quiet and soft-spoken or whether they're loud or, you know, demonstrative, expressive, they see what they mm-hmm. see is a Black woman.
Yep.
And no matter how we're dressed, if that person has their issues, whether it's sexism, racism, classism, whatever ism, mm-hmm. they will treat us the same.
Yep.
So it's kind of like, I just started thinking about, I had all these thoughts.
Yeah.
I have lots of thoughts and lots of feelings.
But you're getting at something about that transactional modesty piece, because a lot of times the messaging we get around it is that it's protective. You know, it's protective to be modest. And when in fact, the way you described it is the way I experience it and observe it. Not usually. Mm. No, what we would hope that it would be, but it isn't. And so since it isn't, and we recognize that if we're honest, then why are we upholding that standard? Mm. Like if we think that a woman should be more protected if she's modest, that's problematic as fuck. Like if, you know, like it's like, well, she had pants on today and the other girl had booty shorts on. So she deserved protection and she didn't. From violence, from sexual assault, from harassment. We really, and I, that was one of the questions I asked because somebody was like upset with the dialogue. They were like, no, you need to be dressed this way and this way. And I was like, and they were like, because then you'd be regarded as a sex worker or, and I was like, do you think sex workers deserve protection? Because I do. Do you think that they deserve care and love? And the person did not answer the question. I mean, and I think that gets to the heart of a lot of us feel like care, love, respect, attention, protection are reserved only for people who uphold certain standards. And some people do like to act on that, but most people are going to treat you the way they want to treat you, violently or not, based on their stuff, whatever they're dealing with.
So my question is, where do you think it came from? Just this notion of, if I dress this way, I'll be protected from, like you said, the violence.
I think, so you know how when you're in an experience that's oppressive, your brain has to come up with some ideas about how to save yourself or how to survive. Regardless of whether they're true, sometimes it's a little bit of magical thinking to feel like you have some control over a situation over which you do not have control. And so I think some ways it's an understandable coping mechanism with oppression to exhibit a type of perfectionism where it's like there are all of these things that I can do to maybe help myself be better protected. And society's messaging legitimizes some of them. So it's not like we were crazy and just making up stuff. Like the messaging in society is that there is a standard to get to for success, for protection, for worthiness. But some people are just born into stuff. Like you think about wealth, people are like, you need to cut your hair or you need to wear your hair in this way for wealth, you know, to move up the professional ladder. Some people are born into nepotism and they're going to move up the professional ladder regardless of what their hair looks like or regard. And so we begin to make these associations that are not causal. It's like, if I act more like a white person and if I, you know, if I embody more misogynistic ideas or if I like all of these things, because that's what we're observing in the power structure, you're like, there's a correlation there. And it's like, no, that's just how people who dominate other people act. And it's not necessarily going to afford you the things that you're looking for. And when it does, on those rare occasions, and it reinforces it, then, you know, folks can uphold that, like, see how that worked. But usually it's not working. And I think if we were honest about how often it works versus how often it does not work, we probably would have a better handle on how we release some of it. So I think it's an understandable reaction to oppression. And it's not one that continues to serve us or maybe has ever served us. Maybe it's been harmful in some ways that we need to consider.
We'll return to our interview with Dr. Hargons in just a moment. I just want to remind you to head to blackwomaninbloom.com/episodes/31 if you'd like to learn more about Dr. Hargons. The link to her website, podcasts, and social media handles will be there. Now, let's get back into the interview.
Well, I was curious of what you came up with. So when you did examine, like, oh, where does this idea about why I like to wear, you know, why I like to put on pants, which is for me totally understandable. But where did you have any insight into where it came from?
I was never like told you need to wear this or that. But for me, especially during teenage years. I was very uncomfortable in my body and having any of my shape show. It was just like, no, which I think a lot of us during that adolescent time, that's kind of common. Just the way our, right? The way our brains are reconfiguring. I felt, and sometimes still do feel safer by being covered, especially where I live right now. It's predominantly white. When I go in spaces, I have to present a certain way to feel safe. I'll look at my clothes and I'm like, oh, if I wear this and I'm going to the mall, what could happen? My legs are out. What if somebody says something? What if some men say something? And even to this, even kind of like adds to kind of what people were saying about Sierra, is like, if I'm with my husband, if I'm out and about with my husband, then I'll feel more comfortable wearing my dress. Like, oh, well, if I'm with him, people might look, but nobody's going to be like, hey, you know,
right.
Nobody's going to be like, hey, baby, you know, so.
Cause they're going to recognize his authority.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because it's like, well, he's my husband. He's not my overseer. You know, it's like, he's my husband. You know, I wear, and I like to think, oh, I wear what I want to wear. But when really it's like, well, I do, but I still give consideration for where I'm going to go, who I'm going to be around, the setting, the vibe.
And I think those are important considerations, right? And so sometimes folks think I'm saying just go to opposite or extreme ends. And it's like, no, you do still get to consider all of those pieces. And your safety, your sense of safety is important in this. And so if you know certain things that you wear help you to feel more safe, I don't have any judgment for that. But when we start to police and survey each other and make judgments about each other's worth based on that, like, you don't deserve a good life if you're wearing booty shorts versus pants or a dress. It's like, and people make those leaps. And it's like, those are the leaps that I'm trying to eradicate, because I think that we can do a lot better and have a lot more compassion and care for each other.
When you talk about worthiness, and I remember I was an undergrad, and I remember I was sitting with some friends, guys and girls, and this was before R. Kelly was, you know, muted or deleted or canceled, whatever he was. But there was conversation about what he was doing with underage girls. And I remember saying to my friends, like, wait a minute, you know, he's wrong. Like, he's a grown man. These are girls. He should be held accountable. He should be like, why are we still supporting him? And why are we putting this? At that time, there was this conversation of like, these are fast-tailed girls. And so, no, it wasn't said at the time, but now that I'm thinking back on it, it was kind of like, were these girls worthy of protection from him? And I even had a friend say, who was from Chicago, say, well, I've known some of the girls, or I've known people who've known the girls, and this girl, that girl, they were fast. And so it was almost like, said like, oh, well, she's fast, or they're fast, so they got what they deserve. And I remember thinking, what? being confused, because I was like, they're girls, he's a grown man, it's wrong, it's just wrong.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the language at the time to, or just the assertiveness either, to question mm-hmm. and say, well, because they were these quote unquote fast girls, they didn't deserve protection from this grown man. And it just makes me think about how far we're coming, also how the steps we need to still take.
Mm-hmm. When you tell that story, it hits home for me. One, because I was a fast girl, so I embraced that as an aspect of my identity, because I was always curious about sex and precocious, and I made my sexual debut at 14. Like I made the decisions that I felt like I wanted to make, though, and it wasn't with grown ass men. It was with peers. And so had I in that age made a decision that I wanted to be with an adult male, the community's responsibility and that adult male's responsibility was to tell me no, to say, absolutely not. You're not at the age of consent to make this decision. You know, like this is not something that we play with. This is something that you don't want to do. And this is something that I am not going to do because I'm not a predator. And that is the conversation that I think a lot of us avoid having. What was the community around them? What was their responsibility to those girls? What was R. Kelly's team's responsibility? What was R. Kelly's grown-ass responsibility to say no and not elicit or solicit attention from girls, from children? And then how does that like map onto the adultification of Black girls? Yes. It was like, you're not even at the age of consent. Your prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed. So no, you cannot consent to having a sexual experience with a grown adult male. You can consent to sexual exploration with peers. And even in that case, what questions should we be asking? What type of sex education should we have so that girls around that age can make informed decisions? So we missed the mark on so many things, on comprehensive sex ed for generations of people, on sexual violence prevention and sexual predation prevention in our communities, all communities, but just, you know, I care most about the Black community, so that's what I'm speaking to. We miss the opportunity to have restorative justice and to hold adults responsible for adult decisions when we blame Black girls and women. It's such, like, we do such scapegoating when, in fact, we're very vulnerable in our society and in our communities. And I think that the type of mental gymnastics you got to make to come up with, well, they're fast, so they deserved sexual violence. Like, how do you sleep well? I don't know.
And I like that you listed out the different steps that we can take. I really enjoyed you sharing your expertise and just laying out, you know, explaining the different concepts and laying out solutions.
So thank you so much for having me.